Thank you both. The husband and wife glared at each other across the office of their marriage counselor like two steely-eyed duelists prepared for combat. For several months, they had met individually with the therapist, who listened to seemingly unrelated descriptions of their life together. For the first time, the therapist and the couple sat together in her office, and angrily their voices soared. Phrases such as, "That's not so. That's not what happened. I did not say any such thing," rang through the entire building. And finally, in absolute exasperation, the wife shrieked, "That's the problem. You never hear a word I say." And the husband nodded in agreement. "And you never hear a word I say." And the therapist nodded inwardly. And after weeks of listening to them, she could, without a single doubt, confirm that neither of them heard a word the other said. In the Canterbury Tales, Chaucer described the type of non-hearing as, "One ear it heard, at the other out it went." And Jonathan Swift poetically stated, "They never could hear, but turn the deaf ear as a matter they had no concern in." Now, Charles Fillmore defines hearing as the ability to look deeper than words and catch the inner meaning. He goes on to say that in many places, the Bible indicates that the ear referred to is not the physical organ, but the listening mind. On seven occasions, the gospel accounts the life of Jesus, quoting him as saying, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." This statement was not original with Jesus. In the Old Testament book of Deuteronomy, chapters 29, verses 2 through 4, we read, "And Moses summoned all Israel and said to them, 'You have seen all that the Lord did before your eyes in the land of Egypt, to Pharaoh and to all his servants and to all his land, the great trials which your eyes saw, the signs and those great wonders. But to this day the Lord has not given you a mind to understand, or eyes to see, or ears to hear.'" The Old Testament prophet Ezekiel adds, "The word of the Lord came to me, 'Son of man, you dwell in the midst of a rebellious house. Who have eyes to see, but see not? Who have ears to hear, but hear not?'" Robert Bolstrom, a professor at the University of Kentucky, teaches listening skills, and he would very likely agree with Ezekiel. He says, "Immediately after listening to a 10-minute presentation, the average listener has heard correctly, understood properly, evaluated, and retained only about 30% of what was said. Within 48 hours, retention of oral communication drops to about 20%. And the professor goes on to advise that if you have a negative attitude toward listening, you'll never become a good listener. One bad habit to avoid is to assume that you know what the person you are listening to is going to say. Interrupting others is another bad habit that interferes with effective communication. It's not only rude, but it keeps you from hearing what the other person is going to say. Often people interrupt because they are concentrating on what they are going to reply instead of listening to the message. Listening to another person is fundamental to understanding him. If an individual is not heard, really heard, then he may make himself heard in ways that are not acceptable. The child with a tantrum, the teenager with drugs, the adult with anger or stony silences, or recurring illnesses, for example. To be heard is an innate need of all human beings. The psalmist wrote these words, and they re-echo from the heart of each of us. "Hear my prayer, O Lord. Let my cry come to thee. Do not hide thy face from me. Incline thy ear to me. Answer me speedily in the day when I call. To be heard is a universal need, and since there is such a demand for good listeners, we may consider it surprising that so few of us practice this art. Anyone who acquires the ability to listen effectively gains a real advantage in life. People pay large sums of money to counselors, to therapists, and to psychologists simply to have someone who will listen to them. With such a universal need, how incongruous it is that so few take advantage of using their listening skills. I heard this story about a woman who was taking a class in public speaking at a local college. She had meticulously prepared her first talk. But on the way to the class, she was caught in traffic and she was late in arriving. As she entered the classroom, the instructor informed her that it was her time to talk. And though she was not yet settled, she was not nervous because she was well prepared. And as she began her talk, she noticed that the class was unusually restless. Some of the students yawned widely. Two or three of them openly conversed with each other. And one actually shook his wristwatch to see if it was still running. The poor woman, she struggled on, and she became nervous and increasingly ill at ease. And finally, in desperation, she called out, "Why are you doing this to me?" And at these words, the whole class burst out in laughter. Before the student had arrived, the instructor told the class to be as poor of listeners as they possibly could. He wanted to impress upon everyone that it is as essential to be a good listener as it is to be a good speaker to communicate effectively. As an experiment, a college offered two courses in communications. One was entitled Public Speaking, and the other called Effective Listening. So many students signed up for the course in public speaking that a second class had to be scheduled. It was offered in the time slot that had been scheduled for effective listening because no one signed up for the effective listening class. Have you ever considered what a wonderful listener Jesus must have been? It was essential from his earliest days. Education came at a premium to the young Israelite at that time. Public schools connected with a local synagogue had been introduced to Palestine a few years before Jesus' birth. But educational legislation was not effective until 30 years after his crucifixion. As a result, education was a privilege, and it was not available to all. And only boys attended synagogue schools. Girls were taught skills of homemaking by their mothers at home. The Bible was a basic textbook in those synagogue classes, though grammar and history and geography were studied as well. Even with schools available for some, the Jewish father instructed his son in most matters, including making a living, religion, and general education. In both the school and at home, there were no books to study. The one copy of the book at the school was guarded and was only minimally available to the student, if at all. And so it was that the student learned almost exclusively from what he heard and from the guiding touch of a teacher in skilled training. The accuracy of what they heard and was shown and depended on the memory of the teacher and what he had heard and what he practiced. Many families of that area traveled to Jerusalem each year for Passover, as did Jesus' family. He did this when he was 12 years old. And after the Passover feast, Mary and Joseph began the long journey home, assuming that Jesus was with them in the company of other travelers. And after a day of journeying, they discovered that he was missing. Now we can imagine the feelings of Jesus' parents during their way back to Jerusalem and the three-day-long search for their son. And then we are told They found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking questions. It was this quality of being a good listener that filled Jesus with the proper power to transform the love of God into the solutions to the maladies of mankind. Under such circumstances, it behooved the Jewish boy to listen very carefully. There was much to be learned, not just in school, but also at home, at the market, at the town gate, and at the place of worship. The healing of all types of diseases was one use he made of this power. All too often, we may assume that Jesus healed through strange and spectacular means. We may think that each of his healings took place instantaneously and seemingly miraculously, as did that of the woman who suffered with a hemorrhage for 12 years and was healed at the touch of Jesus' garment. In the final analysis, however, it boils down to being able to effectively hear. Jesus was able to hear and to understand the needs of people. He knew what to say and to do for them to bring out the highest faith they had at the moment. The healing was successful when Jesus was heard, and his faith message was believed. Where there was great faith searching for the right answer, what they had already heard about Jesus' power was enough proof for healing. This was the case of the woman with the hemorrhage. Jesus recognized this great quality and praised it, saying, "Daughter, your faith has been made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." Unfortunately, such faith was not always the rule. And when the faith of the individual was not strong, Jesus offered that which was necessary to cause that person to listen with enough attention to strengthen his or her faith to bring about the healing. Sometimes he used touch of his hand, and sometimes he dictated specific actions. Always he spoke for their healing the word of truth. The cases in which Jesus healed by his touch are especially interesting. As you know, all human beings need to be touched. Scientific experiments have shown that even the touch of a pet is reassuring and healing to us. How much greater must be the healing power in the touch of a fellow human being? One example of healing through touch, which opened the patient's ears to hear, is that of the leper. We read of it in Matthew chapter 8, verses 2 and 3, which states, "A leper came to him and knelt before him, saying, 'Lord, if you will, make me clean.' And he," Jesus, "stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, 'I will be clean.' And immediately his leprosy was cleansed." Leprosy was the scourge of the Eastern world. Those who contracted this dread disease were forced to live apart from others. They were shunned and touched by no one. We can imagine the shame and the loneliness of the person with such a condition. Yet this man longed to be made clean so badly that he left his place of hiding and came to Jesus with his request. Now surely Jesus listened with that inner ear and felt deep compassion with this man for the physical and the emotional pain he had endured. And then Jesus did the unbelievable. He did that which simply was not done. He reached out with his own hand and actually touched the leper. At this touch, at this act of love, the man regained his self-respect and he was healed. Another case is that of the crippled woman, as told by Luke. Now Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath, and there was a woman who had a spirit of infirmity for 18 years. She was bent over and could not fully straighten herself. And when Jesus saw her, he called her and he said to her, "Woman, you are freed from your infirmity." And he laid his hands upon her, and immediately she was made straight, and she praised God. She could have shut out his words. Instead, the touch and the word of truth opened her ears, and she was able to hear her own wholeness. A more complex example of having ears to hear the truth and manifest it takes place in the story of the epileptic boy, according to Mark. Jesus arrived on the scene in the midst of a great commotion, and a man told him, "Teacher, I brought my son to you, for he has a dumb spirit, and whenever it seizes him, it dashes him down, and he foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid, and I ask your disciples to cast it out, and they were not able." Jesus then commented on the lack of faith as the cause of the disciples' failure to heal. This case must have appeared more difficult to them, thus their lack of success. As they brought the boy to Jesus, he was again convulsed, and he fell on the ground, foaming at the mouth. And Jesus asked the father, "How long has he had this?" And the father replied that he had been in this condition since childhood. "And it has been cast him into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you can do anything, have pity on us and help us." And again, Jesus emphasized the importance of faith. And since the patient himself was unable to converse, it was his father to whom Jesus listened. And it was his father's faith he worked toward increasing. In response to the father's statement, "If you can do anything," Jesus replied, "If you can, all things are possible to him who believes." And then the man cried out, "I believe, help my unbelief." Surely all of us relate to this heartfelt plea. We do indeed believe, yet we know that our faith falls short of perfection. The story of this healing is one of universal hope and promise, for it is clear that total and absolute faith was not required for Jesus to do his healing work. The heartfelt, sincere desire for faith was sufficient. The events of this healing continued to unfold as Jesus rebuked the unclean spirit, exclaiming, "You dumb and deaf spirit, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." After crying out and convulsing, the boy became like a corpse, and most of the people believed that he was dead. But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he rose. In the case of the healing, Jesus spent much time with the boy and his father. Clearly, he gave them full inner hearing in order to bring about the faith that heals. Often when an illness occurs, an individual may be conditioned to believe that some outer action is necessary before healing can take place. In the purest sense, this is not so. Sufficient faith heals any condition. Most of us, however, have not yet reached that point of perfect faith. And until we do, it is advisable that we turn for assistance to those who can increase our faith, whether it be spiritual assistants or physical practitioners, such as surgeons, medical doctors, chiropractors, therapists, or others. Jesus understood that people may require outer action to increase their faith. To these, he listened and he offered that which they needed. This was the case of the man born blind, as told in the Gospel of John. To heal his sight, Jesus simply spat on the ground and made clay of the spittle and anointed the man's eyes with the clay, saying to him, "Go, wash in the pool of Siloam." And so he went, and he came back seeing. It is likely that should this event occur today, surgery would be performed, perhaps with a laser, and the man's vision would probably be restored. We must admit that Jesus' method with the spit and the clay was equally effective and much less costly. Surely, each of us desires to follow Jesus' footsteps. We want to be a healing influence for ourselves and for our loved ones. One of the most effective healing techniques is that of listening. For when we truly listen to one another, we are saying to that person, "You are a worthwhile individual. I care about you." We also benefit when we listen, for the truth is that people are interesting and people are loving when they feel free to express their true nature. You might say, "Oh, but I'm not a good listener. That's just the way I am." The truth, however, is that we are not born good listeners or poor listeners. Listening effectively is a skill that each of us can develop. When we fail to listen to one another with an ear of inner understanding, we become locked into false concepts of who and what that person really is. We become like the little boy. We become like the little boy whose Sunday school teacher decided to give a class in nature lesson. "What is it," the teacher asked, "that lives in a tree, gathers nuts in the autumn, and has a long, bushy tail?" Little Johnny looked about the Sunday school room with his brightly displayed Bible pictures, and he puzzled over the question for a moment, and then he replied, "I know the answer is supposed to be Jesus, but it sounds like a squirrel to me." When we listen, it is not necessary for us to rely on what we know the answer is supposed to be. We can rely on what it sounds like to the inner ear of true hearing. Now, I'm happy to report that the couple I told you about at the beginning of the lesson have resolved their marital problems through the art of listening. When one of them has something vital to say, he or she begins with, "I want you to really hear this." The golden rule is a good one to follow, to do unto others as we would have them do unto us. We know how good we feel when someone cares what we are saying. Consequently, how happy it makes us to bring that same happiness to others. One way we can do this is by listening. Listening is caring. Listening is accepting. Listening is loving. Listening is rewarding to us personally. Who knows but that the next stranger who speaks to you will speak the word of truth that opens your life to total wholeness. Let us, like Jesus, have ears to truly hear. Shall we begin now to make this lesson practical? Will you please join me in our closing meditation? Please take a moment to get comfortable. Place your feet on the floor in a comfortable position and your hands comfortably in your lap or at your side. And just relax for a moment. If you need to take a deep breath and exhale slowly to let go of everything, now's the time to do it. Be still and quiet your mind. Let go of everything that is outside of this holy, peaceful sanctuary. If you're holding on to worrisome thoughts, resentments, your to-do list for the week, let it all go. It has no place in your mind or in your heart or in this sanctuary. Just be still. Be still and go within to the center of your being, where our Father waits and welcomes you with his open arms, unconditional love, and his eternal peace. Our Father speaks to us always. Even now, this very moment, he is speaking. And I must ask myself, am I listening? Am I truly listening? Our Father has given us ears to hear and eyes to see, but what am I hearing and seeing? Let me close my human ears and my human eyes and allow my spiritual eyes and my spiritual ears to be open to the truth. Let me read between the lines and discern the hidden meaning in all that is. Let the veil be lifted from my eyes, that I may see beyond the film and past all appearances to the presence of God in all of creation. Let my human ears become deaf to the noise of the world and the clanging cymbals and the babble of voices clamoring to be heard. Let my spiritual ears be open so that I may hear the word of God as he speaks to me, guides me, strengthens me, heals me, and blesses me in all my ways. Father, I pray, let me be the one that receives the seed in good ground, and heareth the word and understandeth it, which also beareth fruit. For the blessing of spiritual perception, and ears that hear, and eyes that see rightly, Almighty Father, I give you thanks. Amen. The Lord blesses you and keeps you. He causes his light to shine upon you. He is gracious unto you. He lifts your consciousness and gives you his infinite, eternal, and unconditional love and life. Amen.